I'm already laughing. Comedian Alex Edelman is here in Studio 2, born in Brookline. His memories of growing up in Greater Boston still inform his identity and his stand-up. He's back in town with a solo show just for us. It's at the Calderwood Pavilion at the Boston Center for the Arts through April 23rd. And then, where are you going next, Broadway?
Well, I guess I'm, yeah, it's going to Broadway, which is pretty astounding. And also, I guess I'm announcing it here, but we've just, in the last 5 minutes, put on sale one big show at the Colonial at the end of May 20th, because this run is pretty much sold out, which is really nice. So it's been a really warm, like, homecoming. Like, it's my first time, like, properly headlining a run here in Boston. And so, as someone growing up here, I used to drive past the theater when it was called the Huntington on my way home. And so it's sort of surreal and really sweet, and it's just been, like, really warm and nice as a Boston kid, Boston stand-up. Like, it's one of the best feelings I've ever had. So,
all right, so now I don't want to get right away. Later we will, because I understand you're a Boston sports fan, but I don't need to get right away into the whole Boston New York thing, the playing here versus playing Broadway. But I will say, it is something to be taking a solo show to Broadway.
I don't want to be like, it's unprecedented, but it's unexpected is what I'd say. Comedians, especially comedians who aren't, you know, like, super famous, like Jerry Seinfeld or, you know, Mike Birbiglia or Steve Martin, for a comedian like me to do Broadway is a huge sort of, like, you know, it's really nice. It's the show I've been doing has really resonated with people. It started in, like, very small rooms, very tiny rooms, you know, 10 people, 30 people. And so to see it get to a place where it can be playing to, you know, that many folks in a night, has really been this, like, wonderful experience. It's genuinely mind boggling. And it's really, like, again, it's a career highlight, and Mike Birbiglia, who I just mentioned, who actually is one of the producers of the show, he said to me, he said, take it in, because it only happens once. He was like, he's like, it's never going to happen again, so you better really enjoy it, and I have been, actually. It's been
now,
really sweet.
So it's always hard. You're getting to know somebody new who's, you know, a star is rising like you. It's always hard to know, do we start with the show? Do we start with your background? But part of what is interesting about you is so much of your background is your show, is your comedy, right?
That's true.
Is kind of how you bringing your story forward is how you got here.
I mean, yeah, I think that my show is a mixture of sort of, like, anecdotes and social observation and, like, memoir and things that are tangentially. It's very accessible, but it's very specific, which I think, like, sometimes things can be, like, you remember my Big Fat Greek Wedding? Remember that movie?
People
were always like,
"Oh
my God, it's so specific," but everyone watched that movie and they're like, "That's my family." And so, like, I think, like, lots of people watch a show and they're like, oh, there is some, I guess, I used to work for this woman, Jenji Cohan, who's a great TV writer, and Jenji would say that the specific is universal. So, yeah, I guess leaning into my own personal background has, you know, provided me with lots of, like, fodder and perspective for stand-up comedy. So, yeah, you can start wherever you want, basically, is the long and short of it.
So let's start a little bit with your mom and dad.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because you... You make fun of your mom and dad the way we all make fun of our moms and dads.
Well, everyone's parents are so funny because the relationship is so crazy and you get to observe them up close for so long. And the funny thing is, like, I don't think of it as making fun of them, but I have this joke that my dad is this really accomplished professor at Harvard Medical School and MIT, and he's a doctor at Brigham Women's. And whenever I say Brigham's, by the way, my dad is like, Brigham's is an ice cream parlor, and Brigham and Women's is the hospital. But my dad's this really accomplished physician and scientist. My mom thinks he's the dumbest piece of trash who's ever lived. And but everyone, you know, everyone's parents, you know, everyone's mom thinks everyone's dad is an idiot, or vice versa. It doesn't matter. And, like, and so there is universality to that specific dynamic. But, you know, my parents are genuinely very funny, lovely, intelligent, supportive people. Mom's a lawyer. Mom's a lawyer here at DLA Piper. Dad's you know, this academic over in Cambridge. So it's a really, like, really fun thing to get to come home and perform basically in front of all their friends. Really,
so I have a question. You say in one of your stand-up routines, you say that your dad almost won a Nobel Prize.
Yes. And there is no, you know, that's a bit of stand-up fudgery because there is no almost winning note.
Yeah, because I was like, how do you know?
Well, you know what it was people were coming up to me being like, you know, your dad should be, my dad does work with stents, like the little things that go in people's arteries and hearts. And so people used to come up to me when I was finishing college, be like, you know, your dad should really win the Nobel Prize for the stuff that he's done. But mostly that was people who had gotten a stent that he had personally worked on or something like that. But so for a while, that was how I would describe my dad. But no, I don't think Elazar Edelman is coming away with a Nobel Prize anytime soon. So that's a bit of stand-up exaggeration. But we used to make fun of him, be like, oh, the Nobel Prize winner over here can't, you know, smear a bagel or whatever.
So another thing that you talk a lot about in your comedy, and this comes up a lot in Just For Us, you mm-hmm. center it in Just For Us to some extent, is growing up in an Orthodox Jewish family, mm-hmm. becoming aware of your Judaism. You talk about finding sort of really understanding you were Jewish in a Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah, I mean that is. Do you guys know what the show's about generally?
Why don't you tell us?
Okay, so I went to this meeting of white nationalists in Queens, and eventually
in 2017,
end of 2017, and one of them was like, "Sorry, but this guy's a Jew," and I'm like, "Yeah, I'm a Jew." And so like that's broadly what the show is about, but it's you know a way to sort of get a Jewish identity. But yes, the Chuck E. Cheese.
Okay, so we have to time out mm-hmm. because nobody is going to be able to listen to the Chuck E. Cheese story until I ask you, why did you go as a Jewish man to a meeting of white supremacists in Queens in 2017?
It's so funny. This is like the number one question that's asked about
Well,
the show.
It's kind of a reasonable question to ask.
You know, I get that, but I also don't. Because like, wouldn't you, if you were given the chance, go to, and wouldn't you be interested? Like, that's the thing. I'm like very, I always like tell people, and I truly believe this, that like curiosity is my defining characteristic. And so, like, you know, I've never not wanted to go to places like that. Like, it doesn't mean I think they're cool people. It doesn't mean that I agree with them. But, like, and I understand why that question would be asked. But most of the people who ask that question, sometimes I'm like, would you seriously not, if you thought you could walk in there and sit down and listen and maybe participate, wouldn't you want to do that?
Well, let me ask you. It depends. What were you curious about? What did you want to understand?
Well, not
better?
To give too much away about the show, but someone tweeted, someone there was a message that said, "Hey, if you have questions about your whiteness, or if you're not ashamed of your whiteness, something to do with whiteness, then come to blank." And I was like, "I have questions about my whiteness." Like I thought, there was a part of me that was like that thought maybe 10% that it was going to be like a really academic, interesting discussion of whiteness. And I was like, "Well, I've been in those rooms before where like people discuss their own whiteness and the vicissitudes of whiteness, and so that'll be pretty interesting." And that was not this. This was a little more like a little less academic and a little more I don't know, a little more funny, I suppose, if you think the show. But it has been a really interesting filter through which to like examine Judaism and whiteness and other people's relationship and extremism, which has become interesting to people over the last couple of years, in a way that maybe it wasn't when I started writing the show. And so it's been a really, really fascinating, transporting evening to sort of like revisit again and again. But you know, that curiosity continues. Like there's a friend of mine who's sort of arranging for me to maybe spend some time with Louis Farrakhan in the coming months, and I am curious about perspectives that are different and in some cases radically different than my own.
So what are you discovering?
You know, it's different for different people. It's I would say that, you know, there's a quote that my father attributes to Einstein. And I've never been able to find it, but so maybe he's like misquoting, maybe it's somebody else. But that like God created Nazis, but he created three things. He created Nazism, intelligence, and integrity, but he didn't give human beings the capacity to possess all three at once. So you could be intelligent and have integrity, but you couldn't be a Nazi. Or you could be a Nazi and have intelligence, but you couldn't have integrity. Or you could be a Nazi with integrity, but you couldn't have intelligence. So like, to sum it up, like people who have lots of hatred in them are either missing an element of integrity or missing an element of intelligence, I would say. Does that make sense? Like sort of like, And so I find lots of people with frustrations that indicate a lack of, I would say, intelligence or complaints that indicate a lack of integrity. That's what I find in people once you get to know them. So sorry, that's academic.
No, it's okay. I mean, you pushed me to ask you a better question when I asked
No.
This is good. You pushed me to ask you a better question, and that's a better answer, right? And so then—
It's very boring. You're still listening, congratulations. You now have a PhD in comparative anthropology, but
you just called my show boring.
I called my answer boring. Your show is fascinating. I'm bringing this egghead garbage to your show, is frankly. It's a comedy show. What I'm doing is a comedy show, I promise.
We're talking to comedian Alex Edelman, who is taking a solo show just for us to Broadway. So I want to bridge that now. So you have this really deep curiosity. And in reading about you, one of the other things I discovered is you are one of those people who doesn't find difficult conversation and combative conversation uncomfortable. In fact, you seek it out.
Oh, no, I love it. I love arguments. I love after the show, I stand outside and I won't be able to do this on Broadway probably because it could be like 1,000 seats. But I stand outside and answer any question that anybody has about anything. Like, I'm so down to hear whatever anyone wants to ask. Lots of things have come out of conversations and arguments, you know, about the show, you know, that have happened immediately afterwards. Like, I think it's brilliant. And I think that I also think that we live in a time where more nuance and more doubt and more sort of face-to-face, fulsome argument and conversation has led to, like, better stuff. So I'm very interested in, like, that type of, like, argument. And I also think that growing up in Boston, I, you know, benefited a lot from that. I would say, not to generalize, but in my personal experience, the East Coast is more comfortable with uncomfortable conversation than the West Coast, at least the West Coast that I live in now. Like, I live in Los Angeles now. I love living in Los Angeles. That's not true. I don't love living. I love aspects of living in Los Angeles. But I would say that the East Coast culture of sort of like debate has always sort of arguments in bars and, you know, and restaurants and delis and ballparks is like sort of what is the basis of my personality and the basis of my identity and the basis of my sort of like method of inquiry. And so like that's been so huge for me. And like I would say that that's more of an East Coast thing, Boston, New York, than a West Coast thing, LA, San Diego, you know. So like that's what I would. Does that make sense?
It does. So then is the funny what we do to help us deal with the discomfort?
I think that there's funny in, you know, like not just to help us deal with discomfort, but also like as a really great way of like making a point, like a really uncomfortable point. Like one of my favorite authors is this woman, Dara Horn. She's written this book called People Love Dead Jews, which is about how people are more comfortable with Jews who aren't alive anymore than they are with like, and the book, she doesn't realize that it's funny. Like genuinely, there are funny things in the book. And she has this example that she gives of an employee at the Anne Frank House wanted to wear a yarmulke to work, like kippah, like a head covering. And the museum said, you can't wear that because it will, our mission is to neutrality. And it will sort of like infringe on our neutrality. And they debated and the employee was like, I'd really like to wear this yarmulke. And they debated for 4 months. And then they decided to let the employee wear the yarmulke. And Dara says, 4 months seems like a long time for the Anne Frank House to decide whether or not it's a good idea to force a Jew into hiding. And like, that's a joke. Like, that's clearly a joke, right? Like, but it's very incisive and it's very dark, but it's still very funny. And it makes a really great point. And I always think, sometimes people come up to me after the show and they're like, I can't believe you'd make a joke about the topic you made a joke about. And I'm like, I think it's too important not to make jokes about. So I think discomfort and comedy are like, you know, siblings. Like they go together really well. And it's not just about, you know, finding comfort in the jokes. It's about dealing with it by calling out what it is in its most specific element.
So what we've got 30 seconds left. What's your invitation to the audience?
My invitation to the audience is come to the show. It's very funny. I know that you're like, well, you've just had a long academic discussion about hate, but it's very funny. And I love the fact that I'm getting a chance to do it in Boston because I grew up here, and so much about me is, you know, in this city. And yeah, it's been wonderful and warm, and please come be a part of it if you can possibly find the time and patience.
Well, congratulations on your rise. I'm so glad you came and joined us. Alex Edelman, the solo show is just for us. It's playing at the Calderwood Pavilion at the Boston Center for the Arts now through the 23rd with a capstone show. We just found out May 20th?
At the Emerson Colonial Theater, and tickets go on sale tomorrow, but I've just put up a link on my Instagram, my social media. So if you can find me, Alex Edelman, there is a way to get early access to that.
So cool. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.